This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jason has a piece that just about an hour ago, the Post-Gazette put online, an exclusive piece with the general manager, Neil Huntington. A nice Sunday conversation. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing great.
Oh, well, thank you. We're doing great, too. Let me ask you.
Apologies. How are you guys doing?
No, we're good. All right, what did you learn in this piece? What rises to the top? What did you need to get in up high of this story? What did you learn?
A couple things. One, that it certainly sounds like, although people have been clamoring for changes and they need to do something and fire Clint Hurdle and whatever, it really does not sound like it's going to happen in season. If they do something, it's going to be out of season. The second thing I learned was that Huntington really is bullish on some of the kids that they have right now. And I mean, you know, Kevin Newman, Brian Reynolds, Josh Bell, obviously, but one of the additional cries that I hear from fans is that they need to blow it up and rebuild. And I don't think Huntington's there. I think he believes they have enough pieces, whether you agree with them or not. And that also Neil Huntington really likes that 2011 and 2012, 2013, that sort of window there. That parallel in the article and in the conversation, he referenced it quite a bit.
So who else believes that this thing is moving in the right direction then, aside from the guys whose jobs are on the line and should believe that if they want to defend the job they've done, that they're moving in the right direction? Do you get a sense? I know ownership is not in touch with anybody, but do you get a sense from people outside of Neil Huntington, Clint Hurdle, Frank Coonerly, that if those moves happen, they still could happen this offseason, or should we expect all the same characters back in the spring?
Yeah, I'm not saying I would expect all the same characters back, but what I'm saying is I think if anything happens, it'll happen in the winter. I don't see how they can go at this thing again with the same cast of characters. And I'm not saying, you know, that means they're gonna fire Huntington, Hurdle, Ray Searidge, whatever. But I mean, come on. You have to realistically look at this and question, are these the right guys in place? I don't think all of this is Clint Hurdle's fault by any stretch, but you have a bunch of young kids and you have a manager that, you know, all of this stuff happened on his watch in the second half. You maybe look to go in another direction. I'm not saying they do or don't, but I certainly think the question is worth asking. And to your earlier point, Chris, how they, you know, are saying that the direction is fine. I do think it was interesting because Neil often gets lost in the, you know, 10,000 simulations or like explaining the minutiae of something. But I think a lot of times what fans want is kind of a pound of flesh and just an admission that, look, things aren't okay right now. We aren't okay with this. And I thought that he came as close as anyone has around there to saying, you know, we need to fix this. We have some problems. We need to figure out why we went from 2.5 out to where they are.
Jason Mackey joining us here. You could text us, Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line, 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. I have two questions, the first of which is, when they were 2.5 games back at the All-Star break, in your talks with Neil Huntington, did he believe, and follow me on this though, did he believe that that was a real 2.5 games back?
Oh, yeah. I think they, right or wrong, Colin, because I have doubts whether I think that was a real 2.5 game back, and I know what you mean, or whether it was just a bad division and they happened to be, you know, kind of bobbing along with the rest of them. But, you know, I think they thought they were a legit 2.5 games out at the All-Star break, and they're kind of hitching their wagon to it. And that worries me a little bit, because you're basically saying we were right there, but, I mean, you were a game under 500. You were, you know, competing with the Cubs when they hadn't found anything, the Cardinals when they hadn't found anything. I think the Brewers are a, you know, somewhat flawed team for being a team that we like to lump in with the other contenders in the Central. Like, it was a bad division, and they were just happening to be competitive in it. I get acknowledging that, like, they're not, you know, they weren't 20 games under 500 for the entire season. I think that's fair. But saying like, hey, we were nearly in first place at one point, things are fine, I think that's where you got to be careful.
And the second question really quickly is there's this want or need to reference the 2012 team all the time whenever you're drawing parallels to this team. Do you feel it's flawed because that team won 78 games? I mean, I think that team and the team also had identifiable pieces that were going to come through the organization in the next wave that were going to be very good.
Yeah, and my problem with drawing parallels year to year in sports, and especially when you're, you know, talking 2012 to 2020, I mean, there's just so many variables, man. There's so many different things that can happen that I can't look at that and say, oh, well, we did it 2012 to 2013, so, you know, this is kind of what we're doing here. I mean, it's a different game. They're different people. You have injuries, and to me, it's just not that simple. I do think that's the parallel the Pirates are trying to draw, though. And, you know, to be fair, like, I need to get out of my own way and admit that they do have some pieces here. There are some things, and I can see the logic behind what Neil Huntington's doing. I do have a tough time saying everything because it was once this way, it's now going to again be this way.
Well, where I lose his logic, Jason, is when he starts talking about the pitching staff, for example, and the rotation specifically, and every name he brings up, it's a matter of if this and if that, if Archer continues to turn a corner, if this guy does that, if Keller can do this, if Musgrove this, and he even threw in, I saw in your discussion with him, Brubaker, if this guy this and this guy that. It's a whole lot of hoping and wishing and fingers crossed and saying, well, if all this happens, we'll have a really good pitching staff.
Yeah, I agree with that. Way too many ifs. And, you know, if Stephen Brault continues his current performance, if Joe Musgrove, I don't know if you mentioned Musgrove earlier, Chris, you know, if he finds, like, there's just a bunch of stuff would need to come together. And, you know, even what he has said on his radio show about maybe addressing something in the off season, you know, maybe we'll go out and get a Liriano J. Happ type. That's still another if. What if he doesn't pan out? Their track record has been spotty recently on fixing these guys. So to me, I think their biggest off season need is to go out and get somebody who's not an if, you know, and I mean a starting pitcher. And they don't have to go pay $30 million. We all know they're not going to. Would be lucky if they paid 10. But get somebody who can come in here and is a legit option. Somebody who's going to be there, you absolutely know. I can go with Huntington if he's going to tell me that Trevor Williams is going to be better than he had been before his last start. I can go with Huntington if he's going to tell me that Chris Archer, if he's allowed to be a strikeout pitcher, is going to be a legit member of a major league rotation. But they need to get more assurances.
Follow us on Twitter at 937TheFan, driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram locations in North Huntington and North Hills. Jason Mackey for a few more minutes from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Okay, Gregory Polanco is a really weird thing for me right now because we've been told by Todd Tomczyk he's going through full baseball activity or whatever. Well, then why isn't he here?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Normally, if you're doing that stuff, you're with the team. I think it is to get a little bit more work. I know he participated in a sim game down there, but it's not like he couldn't participate in some semblance of a sim game up here. I know that was the place of his rehab.
Yeah, he's 27 years old.
I know.
I'm trying to figure out what, and are they waiting for the rosters to expand in 4 days? And then it's sort of a paper move where you don't have to necessarily chart out the roster and pad it out as deep. I don't get it, but like as soon as that guy's going through baseball activities, his uniform should say Pittsburgh and not Marauders.
I would think so too, but let's think about it from the opposite perspective. Like, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to hide something? What's the end game there of him staying in Bradenton? Like, I just don't see anything negative that could be up with that. Are they trying to, you know, he's not doing as much, so they're going to lie to us? Like, I don't see why they would do that. I don't see the logic behind it. I mean, they need Polanco to get back and be healthy. They need him to be their everyday right fielder. They don't have another option.
Well, hitting pitchers that are 19 years old that just graduated from Sam Houston State or whatever isn't going to do much. All right.
I mean, it's not like he can pick them up and carry them into a major league game. Like, sooner or later, he's going to have to hit major league pitching. So, I mean, if what, are they going to get him back down there so they can get his confidence back and work on some things? Like, that's not a crime. I'm fine with that. If they're down there because they want him to be with, you know, probably more of an extensive training staff or some things that are available down there. I don't know. I just don't see a controversy there or anything that's kind of fishy.
Speaking of confidence, Mitch Keller finally looked like what we thought Mitch Keller might look like to an extent over the weekend. What was it about that outing for those that didn't watch it? I know he got a ton of swing and miss on breaking stuff.
Yeah, I thought Keller's outing was interesting, fun to watch, should be certainly exciting if you're a Pirates fan. He did a couple things. One, he threw his breaking stuff not only for strikes, but sort of with purpose. He would get ahead in guys and bury his slider and curveball. Previous outings, he was leaving those out over the middle of the plate. Even to get strike one, he was leaving it up in the zone. He threw first pitch strikes to 20 of 24. He put himself in great counts all night and allowed his breaking stuff to play off of that. He's starting to learn things, sequences. One of the things I thought was really neat, it's screwing with the hitter's eyes, is what he does. And he throws a high fastball. I think he was ahead 0-2 at the time. Wastes the fastball high and then buries the slider low. And I think it was Eugenio Suarez was just completely, you could tell he was tricked, fooled, confused, whatever, gets a strikeout out of it. So, I mean, it's just stuff like that. You know, executing early in counts. But Keller looked like a major league pitcher. He looked like the strikeout guy he can be. I thought it was really neat.
I'll tell you, and this is not a Pirate thing. It's a Major League Baseball mandate, and it came down from them. But I thought at some point in the game yesterday, especially with the shift on, that the Pirates middle infield was going to try to turn a double play with Phil Cuzzy running the pivot. You couldn't tell who they were. They were all dressed like umpires. It was very. What did you think of the uniforms?
I hated them, man. I just absolutely hated them. Colin, I think you probably share my opinion on this. Why can't we just have two uniforms? I long for those days, man. I mean, I like the Sunday throwbacks, but that is about it.
Well, yeah,
I don't know why we have 17 uniforms.
Right. When you turn on a Yankees-Dodgers game, you should be able to instantly tell it's Yankees-Dodgers.
And there's also this, Jason. Chris, that's such a great point. There's also this. The Pirates and the Reds, traditionally, are two very crisp set of uniforms. The Reds at home with the white and the red stockings, they've been wearing some kind of throwback ones that are like the big red machine ones. Those are sharp. The Pirates' whites, they pop at home. Both teams' grays look really good. Like, I'm okay with those.
I know, and think about what we think is cool now. Like, when you see a throwback jersey, you're like, oh, man, those old Philly Blues or something like that. And what are we going to do now? You know, in 30 years, what are we going to say? Oh, I really like those ones where the Reds look like a bunch of bakers. You know, I really love the all-black ones. I mean, we're just ruining that. Like, these are iconic because they're worn every day. There's consistency to them. And we're just throwing that all away. And as a sports fan, like, I don't get any more entertained because my team has 27 uniforms. It means nothing. If anything, I like, hey, this is our uniform. We're going to roll with it. We're not going to put numbers or we're not going to put names on the back because we never have and we believe in tradition. Like, just stick with it, man.
Great point. We'll stick with you. We'll talk to you again next week. Jason, we thank you.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
See you, Jay. You too.
Always very enlightening stuff from Jason. We really appreciate it from him.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.